Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Friday, March 30th. I'm one of your hosts, Jared Petty, alongside the Rogue One, Mr. Gary Whitta.
Bonus Whitta Friday. What do you call it? There's no alliteration, but I guess we'll just go with it.
I don't know. I do love alliteration. You're a writer. What are your thoughts on alliteration?
I thought about it this morning and I came up with nothing.
Nothing at all. Whitta Friday. Yeah. Wow. I can't. That doesn't really work there. It's Good Friday.
I made a joke about on Twitter today that it was Good Friday because I was going to be on Kinda Funny today. But then I thought, is that like offensive? I don't know.
But it's reasonably blasphemous. But I think we can say with some confidence that it's a Good Friday.
And it's Good Friday and a Good Friday.
And a Good Friday because we're here together. And being side by side with you, Gary, what it makes me happy.
Right back at you.
Oh, look at that. Vis-a-vis.
I always enjoy your positive energy, your good vibes, and
I get
a contact high off of being around your positivity. I love it.
Beware, because I'm grumpy. Also,
are you in a grumpy mood today?
No, not at all. I'm actually doing pretty well, but I can always rely on you to drag me down. So I'm pretty excited.
I'm good at that.
Be an anchor for my soul.
My specialty.
Pull me into the abyss. No, you're fantastic, Gary. I think a lot of times you play the sardonic part. But you're full of warmth.
On Wednesday, Greg and I got into it a little bit about Superman, as I was saying to you before the show. And I saw a lot of comments afterwards in the Twitch chat and Twitter messages that were sent. People thinking that like it was actually getting really heated and it was uncomfortable and like it was going to come to blows. From my point of view, I found that hilarious because I could never be mad at Greg. Like, he and I do disagree very fundamentally on Superman and some other things. But, like, when I was going, like, oh, I don't want to do this anymore, like, I was just, you know, you're playing a character.
Yeah.
I'm playing a character.
No, there is an element. I mean, people here are very sincere. They're full of openness. They're very transparent about their lives. But it is kind of funny. And
the name.
Sometimes when the lights are on you and the camera's there, it is an energized version of yourself.
I'm not saying that, you know, people that know me in real life and see me on the show, like you and Greg and whoever, know that I don't like suddenly become someone fundamentally different, but it's an amplified version.
Exactly.
That's all it is. You just amp it up a little bit.
If you and Greg had been in the back office playing around and fighting like that, you might have also flipped
it
to the paper
been, yeah,
then
it would have been the,
and
but,
walked
but,
out.
But you can do that when you are friendly enough with someone that they know that you're just joking around.
Exactly.
Like if I did that the day I first met you, you might be like, oh, shit, did I just piss him off? But once you know me better, you know that I'm just pulling your leg.
The day you first met me, you took me out behind the building and beat me with a crowbar.
But you knew that it was... I mean, and again, I shouldn't have done that the first day.
Yeah.
I should have probably waited a week so that you knew I meant it with affection.
Well,
so I apologize for any mixed signals you might have got from
No, I got it. I totally got it. I knew you were a consummate professional. I thought, you know what? This guy wrote the book of Eli. He probably beat me with a crowbar if he wants to.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, exactly. Does that happen? I don't think there's any crowbar beatings in that movie, are there? I don't remember a crowbar beating.
There's an awful lot of kind of blunt weapons.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think I remember.
I don't know if there's
crowbar.
A crowbar. There might have been. We had everything else. Jeez.
Each and every break here on Kinda Funny Games Daily, we bring you all the news that's fit to print. No, that's the New York Times. Perhaps all the news that's fit to say or something like that. Be a part of all of it right now on kindoffunny.com/KFGD. That's kindoffunny.com/KFGD. Let us know what you want us to talk about. Drop your mail right there. Watch us live right now. This is happening here. This is
live.
Occurring.
This is right now.
Watch us live on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. I hope if you're watching this live, you're already doing that. But if you're not, if you're listening to this tomorrow, through the magic of Time Warp, when you come back Monday, you can watch somebody else do this. Or you can watch later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. Hop on to kindoffunnygames/you'rewrong and tell us what we got wrong, facts that we were incorrect about. You can drop those in. We're going to read them to you right here at the end of the show.
Yeah, we don't want to hear about wrong opinions. We want to hear about wrong facts.
Right.
You got something factually incorrect.
But if you can watch the entire book of Eli between now and the end of the show, and we may go long today because it's you and I, so they might be able to do that.
Yeah, we both go long.
Yeah, we're both.
There's no one here to rein us in.
Exactly. It's just the studio is empty. It's Gary, me, and Cool Greg, and that's it.
The lunatics have taken over the asylum.
Exactly. Everybody else is on the road for something else we'll talk about here in a minute. This is your chance. If you want to seize control of the studio right now, if you want your manifesto shared on the air, we're at
this would be the time.
This is the time to
now
strike.
Is the time.
Exactly. You're going to meet the least resistance. I don't think we have anything to defend ourselves with here, but those bats, those Far Cry bats, which, and I don't know where those are anymore. We got that big God of War axe. I guess we could pick that up. Anyway, we don't advocate violence around here. But yeah, go to kindoffunnygames.com/you're wrong. Tell us what we got wrong. And of course, as always, we ask that you support the show on patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. Why would you want to do that? Well, one, you get all kinds of neat exclusive stuff, and that's really cool. And two, you help keep the lights on, help keep the show going. You help keep Gary Whitta in groovy
this
t-shirts.
This is not a charity. As much as I would like it to be.
You like it? You want to live
the,
in...
The wheels of commerce must be greased.
They must be greased by Patreon?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
That seems like the wheels of commerce must be greased by Patreon. I mean, that's... My entire life is built on that principle.
By the sponsors and advertisers as well, but I think the real bread and butter of it is from people like you.
Yeah. You keep us going, and we appreciate it. Thank you so much. Housekeeping.
All right.
You ready for that? Number one, Kinda Funny prom tickets are on sale now.
Are you going to go to the prom?
Absolutely.
What are you going to do? Do you have a role, or are you just going to be in the mosh pit with everyone?
My understanding is that there will probably be some onstage stuff to do, but I'm going because, one, because I love the Kinda Funny folks and want to support them, and two, because my wife said, you know, we never got to go to a prom together.
Oh.
She's like, I want to go to the prom with somebody I like. This will be fun.
And so who's she going with?
So she's going.
Oh, okay. Right, sorry,
yeah. I know, it's kind of weird. Yeah. she's looking for dresses right now, and I'm trying to figure out exactly what I'm going to wear.
So you are going to dress up?
Yeah, I'm going to dress up in something. I haven't decided if it's going to be a tux or some sort of ironic 80s, 90s-esque costume.
You know, my favorite is always the powder blue tux with the ruffles and the whole thing and the big-ass bow tie.
She suggested that. My parents got married in those.
Oh, really?
Yeah, except it wasn't lavender. It was kind of a... like an off pink.
Ooh.
Yeah.
It's funny to think that there was a time when that wasn't ironic. Like, that's what people thought looked good.
Well, I mean, that's kind of the same thing with stainless steel stuff in your kitchen, right? Somebody's going to look back and go, oh, wait, we all thought that was good?
Yeah.
And then we're going to realize. Do you have stainless steel stuff in your kitchen?
We did have stuff like that when I was a kid growing up. Yeah. And flock wallpaper. Do you ever have that?
No. What's flock wallpaper?
Maybe the different name for it here, but it's almost like there's a pattern on the wallpaper, but it's raised up. It's almost like velvety.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Yeah. Yeah. You had that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
What was the pattern? Was it just
like... It was just like a swirly kind of almost like a... I'm going to blank on the name of it now, but there's a particular kind of swirly pattern and you could feel it like it was raised. And it was almost like little bristles, little velvety kind of
There are always terrible ideas happening all around us, so that we're right in the middle of, that we're a part of,
Paisley,
and we may not realize.
It was. Paisley.
Yeah. Oh, I like that. Those kind of terrible ideas that we may not be aware of while they're happening. I love the show The Good Place. You ever watch The Good Place?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And Janet in The Good Place is at one place. So she's becoming more self-aware of her own preferences because at the beginning she doesn't really have those.
Right.
And she says, you know, I've discovered I hate things. So far, it's genocide and leggings as pants.
Right.
I'm thinking about those things right now, looking around going, we may look back on leggings as pants and go, that might have been a mistake.
Well, I don't think I'll ever think that. I'm literally wearing sweatpants right now because I am built for comfort, not for aesthetic appeal.
Not for aesthetic appeal.
I am of an age and at a time in my life where I don't really give a fuck what people think about how I'm dressed or what I look like. I'm well past the point of having to impress anyone.
Can you show me sweatpants?
No, I'm not going to do that.
Oh.
I wear them part. I mean, look, if I was actually going to a meeting or something, I would put on big boy pants. But, you know, I'm behind the desk right now. You can't see them. Who cares? It doesn't matter. I just want to be comfortable in my life. Is that so much to ask?
No, it's not so much to ask. I don't have a hoodie on today because it's too hot, but I have worn the same collection of black and gray hoodies and the same small collection of blue jeans pretty much every day.
See, I'm perhaps more comfortable hosting with you than Greg, when he's always got like his Bombfell, you know, out of the box bespoke, you know, personal shopper tailoring.
Bespoke? Bespoke was yesterday, bespoke is today. Everyone is suddenly saying bespoke.
I don't know, it's a good word. It comes in handy.
I can't understand what it means.
You don't know what it means?
No, I don't know what it means.
It means tailored just for you. It's just for you. It's not like off the peg.
Okay.
Like a bespoke suit is a suit that has been tailored for your preferences and to fit you.
See, that's
it's not that fancy a word.
Wow, it's a fancy word. And I love vocabulary. I love words.
Do you know what erstwhile means?
I do know what erstwhile
means. Dan
Harmon
tweeted the other day that he had been using it wrongly for a long time and only just recently found out that it meant something else. I think we've all had that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's a rich language. English is fun.
Yeah. It's a great, I love it. Beautiful. Yeah. I love language. I love vocabulary.
I do as well.
I pride myself on the fact that I have a pretty good vocabulary. My good vocabulary has for years allowed me to sustain the illusion that I'm smarter than I really am. Because the vocabulary and how you express yourself, you go, oh, that... That guy just said bespoke.
Yeah.
He must be pretty erudite. Yeah. See what I did there?
Look at the erudite. I threw another one in. Good word.
He must.
We have so many rich synonyms. Oh. Why repeat words if you don't have to?
I know. I love it. I love it. And so, but it does help with the illusion, for sure.
I wish I had the acumen to apply that in conversation, not just in writing.
I like it. Let's do this through the rest of the show. Every now and again, let's throw in a big boy word. And see if we can press each other.
All right. I love that. We're going to get one of these wrong eventually if we do this.
Well, yes, the law of averages suggests.
And then we're going to have a year wrong at the end where they're like, you guys were trying to use big boy words.
I do it all the time. I'm going to use a word, but I check myself and I quickly look it up and make sure that I'm, and sometimes I go, oh, it's actually not quite what I thought it was going to be. You got to check yourself. You got to check yourself.
You too. So far we've gotten to prom tickets for 10 minutes, and ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a long ride.
It might be, because there's no hard out today, so this might be a bumper Good Friday, Easter weekend bonanza.
Yeah, we talked right before the episode, and we just decided, you know what, we're just going with it today. Ain't nobody here to stop us. When the Greg is away.
The mice will play?
Will play? Can play? Are we mice?
I don't know. Is he a cat?
Is he a cat?
Is I don't Greg know. Is that the analogy?
I don't think Greg's a cat.
Does he have feline qualities?
I think he's more of a marsupial of some kind.
He's well-groomed.
He is well-groomed. That's true.
He has he shows affection and warmth, which cats don't.
What animal takes their shirt off a lot?
Animals don't wear shirts.
Well, darn. Do any animals wear shirts? And even monkeys don't wear shirts. Donald Duck wears a shirt.
I think we might be abusing how this show can be as long as we like privileges.
All right, we should probably move
we
forward.
We should probably get on with it.
I think you're correct. Right. Kind of Funny's first annual PAX East Chicken Winding. There we go. Screwed that up again. PAX panel Thursday, April the 5th, 7:30 p.m. at the Dragonfly Theater. If you're going to be at PAX, this is your opportunity to meet best friends from the Kind of Funny community and some of the Kind of Funny staff, that's right, personalities, hosts, at all, etc. They're going to be there at Dragonfly, and they would love to see you there, so you need to stop by. This episode is brought to you by MeUndies, but I'll tell you about that later. Also, don't forget that right now, at this very moment, even as we speak, Let's Play Spring Break is happening in conjunction with Rooster Teeth. That's right, that's today, Friday, March 30th. Started at 10 a.m. It's running all the way to 10 p.m. Pacific. So, when you're done watching this extra special, extra long episode of two guys rambling, turn over there, watch your friends at Kind of Funny, because that's where everybody is, ladies and gentlemen. That's why they're all gone. They're off there with Rooster Teeth playing video games, having lots
Everyone
of fun.
Everyone else is having fun except us.
Yep, but you can go have fun with them. You know, are you not having fun?
No, I'm having fun, but you know what I mean. I feel like we've been left behind to house sit. Okay. While everyone else has gone to the beach.
So were you...
That's not to say that we can't have our own party here at the house, mm-hmm. but it's not... I don't know. What is this like spring break? Are they like, I'm thinking like, is it like a sun's out, guns out kind of thing?
I'm kind of hoping Carson Daly's there.
Yeah.
A little bit.
I want kind of TRL kind of vibe.
What I'm asking is, when you're bringing this up, is like, were you juxtaposing our situation with theirs?
Oh, see, I like what you did there. I did appreciate it. And there was some juxtaposition going on there.
Oh, I love that. Juxtapose is my favorite word.
You know what my favorite word is?
Which favorite word?
Verisimilitude.
Oh, I love that. That's so good. That's a question we always
ask. You actually got a genuine excitement there.
Every Pockets Full of Soup, which is a little show I do, we ask what your favorite word is. That's one of the questions.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we ask people their favorite word. So,
do you know what verisimilitude means?
I do indeed.
It actually comes up a lot in my business because we are in the business when I create, you know, science fiction worlds or characters or whatever, or like an alternate reality or a plausible set of rules that, okay, this isn't the real world, but like, you believe it could be, and you want things to be accurate, but sometimes accuracy, like scientific accuracy or historical accuracy, constrains you in your storytelling. That's why you see all the time, like some historical details or whatever have been changed for dramatic effect, because you want to tell the most exciting version of the story while still, in principle, staying true to, you know, the essence of the story that you're telling.
Yeah.
Oftentimes, when you're trying to create something that is not true, it's not real, it's not accurate, but feels, they go, yeah, that sounds right. I buy that. Yeah. That's verisimilitude. So that's verisimilitude is my business.
So creating a congruency within that universe, creating something that actually feels like it belongs.
It's just as simple as that. It's plausible. Yeah. It feels, okay. Even though it's not real, it feels right.
That Star Wars feel.
Yeah.
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 70s future.
Yeah.
Or past. Yeah. Or whatever it is. Long time ago. Etc. Anyway, Let's Play Spring Break. When you're done watching this, head on over there. Also, right now, here's a mouthful. The first annual Kind of Funny Best Friend of the Show Tournament, March, but April Madness could have been May. Mayhem going on right now. Agent Bizzle, Brian Altano versus Mike Drucker ended in a team up. They copped out, two of them. joined together, joined forces. But now, there's another poll up right now on twitter.com/kindoffunnyvids, and you should go there and vote. Who's going to win this matchup, Hunter Pence versus Sean Finnegan?
What exactly is this thing that's going on, this bracket? I'm not... I this feel bracket, like the okay. bracket seems to be very much in vogue right now. I see all these different brackets.
Are you aware of the March Madness?
I know what March Madness is. I know that's the mother of all brackets.
Yes.
But I'm seeing what I'm seeing, like, oh, here's like a Disney Pixar bracket. Everyone's doing their own brackets.
Well, it's just like, hey, you know, so when you go to your office, you ever been part of a brackets office pool before?
I've been in pools, certainly, but not like we don't... In English sports, you don't really have brackets the same way that you have them here.
Okay. So you use more like a Swiss system, like multiple games and best.
It's based
best
more on leagues. Okay. It's, you know, like 3 points for a win and stuff like that. And at the top of the, at the end of the season, if you have the most points, you win the league.
Okay. Well, what we have, brackets are popular for basketball in particular.
Yeah.
And so
I'm familiar with it. I just don't quite, I mean, maybe it's because we just came out of March. Is March Madness still going on?
It's still going on.
Is it still going on?
It's still going on.
Oh, right. Okay. So yeah.
March Madness will roll into April.
So all the other brackets are, people are doing brackets.
Yeah,
brackets
it's like, hey, we got brackets going on. Let's do some other brackets. We don't care about basketball. Have another bracket. Do care about basketball. Have another bracket. I kind of like college basketball. Still want some more brackets.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. I get it.
It's in the zeitgeist.
You are bringing it. I like there it. It's very all much. Right. It's very stuff. Much in the zeitgeist.
That's actually a kind of funny oldie but goodie right there, though. I can't take credit for that one. That's been around a long time.
Yeah, everyone knows what zeitgeist means, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
On top of that, my friend, right now, Hunter Pence versus Sean Finnegan. That's the bracket.
So
right now.
So what happens? Do people vote?
Yeah, they're voting right now on Twitter.com/kindoffunnyvids. The
next round.
They go into the next round. That's right. This morning, Hunter Pence, professional baseball player, San Francisco Giants, versus Sean Finnegan of IGN, was just on the morning show.
But how are those two even comparable? Like, what does that mean?
Well, Sean and I had the same conversation. We both agreed he's going to be stomped.
It was at 47-53.
With who ahead?
When we were speaking, with Hunter ahead, but still, 3% is not much.
Okay, it's 6% difference, really.
Oh, whatever. I suck at numbers.
Listen, y'all, if you're watching this right now, I like Sean Finnegan a lot, but Hunter Pence is better than Sean Finnegan in every measurable way.
I think Sean would cop to that, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
Right. So we're not saying who's the best human, who's the best.
It's just who's the better friend
to us.
Who's the better friend to us?
Yeah, I mean that's the point.
Is that what it is? Who's nicer to the show?
No, still Hunter. If I had to cast one aside in my lifeboat, Sean's definitely going in the
ocean. I would say. I mean, Hunter Pence doesn't need this, does he? I mean, the fact that he does it is quite. He doesn't need to be a kind of funny best friend.
He loves
above all that.
He loves fun.
He's a professional athlete.
But he's not above it all. He's a scooter riding, video game player.
But the point is he could so easily be, but he's chosen not to be.
Yeah, he wants to be a friend. He likes friendship. Good dude. Absolutely. And this afternoon on twitter.com/kindoffunnyvids, there's going to be another one of these. We are somehow 17 minutes into this. I'm mismanaging this program. Moving forward. Yep. The Roper Report. Whatever. Wait, can't do that. It's time for what is... and forever will be.
There you go.
The Roper Report.
There you go.
Time for some news. 6 items on the Roper Report today.
A baker's dozen.
Well done. Excellent.
Very good. Very good.
All right. Moving forward.
You wouldn't know anything that was different, would you? You would think this was a fully staffed operation right now.
You would think so.
You would not know that this was running on fumes.
No, you wouldn't have any idea that this is all a complete disaster, that the guy producing the show just had to run to answer the door because there's no one else here.
There's literally no one else here.
God knows what this kind of feels like?
It kind of feels like the point in the zombie movie where the guy's on TV kind of like, we're going to go off the air now. This will probably be it. We wish you well. Good luck. God bless. God save us all. Oh my God! They're at the door, and then you cut to static.
When there's no more room in hell,
the dead will walk the earth.
The dead will walk the earth. That's where we're at now, my friend. I like that. That is where we are here. All right, this one from Kotaku. Sea of Thieves is a grindy game where even high level quests can grant only a pittance of golden reputation. One dedicated streamer has reached maximum reputation with the game's 3 factions to become a pirate legend and unlock a secret hideout.
This happens with every big online game, doesn't it? I mean, I'm old enough to remember when World of Warcraft came out, like the first person to hit 60, that was a big deal.
It was a
race to who could be the first person to hit the level cap. Every game has this.
And someone has done it. By the way, there are mild spoilers for Sea of Thieves ahead, so be warned. There are 3 major factions in Sea of Thieves: the covetous gold hoarders, the chicken-loving merchants alliance, and the creepy goth moms from the Outorder of Souls. Completing missions for these factions increases a player's reputation, but it's a long way to the maximum rank of 50. Streamer Prodigy X has been playing Sea of Thieves relentlessly since release and managed to achieve rank 50 with all of the factions. In the process, he impressed the judgmental, mysterious stranger who bestowed upon him the rank of, quote, pirate legend, end quote. Prodigy X did receive help from viewers who farmed treasure for him before he joined their crews so he could turn in the loot for reputation boosts. In a game about pirates, this kind of trickery might seem fitting, but it does make the feat less impressive than if he'd endured the grinding and done the full wet legwork alone. I'm not entirely sure if I agree, but anyway, that's in the article. Players on forums such as Reddit and other social media sites have started the hashtag NotMyPirateLegend, calling on Rare to avoid conferring further in-game status to Prodigy X. In addition to bragging rights, Prodigy X received a special outfit and a new chanty to play on his instruments. That chanty was a key to solving the riddle the mysterious stranger gave him. Prodigy X worked with the stream viewers for hours before realizing all he needed to do was play the new song right inside the tavern with the mysterious stranger. It revealed a hidden staircase to an entirely new area, the Tavern of Legends. We're going to stop right there so you don't find out what's inside the Tavern of Legends.
Yeah, I don't want to know. I installed it yesterday, but I haven't played it yet.
Gary, Not My Pirate Legend. What do you think about that?
What do you mean, Not My Pirate Legend?
Well, that's the hashtag from the article we just read.
Oh, I see. Well,
people saying, hey, look, you got help.
Like I said, this happens. Well, first of all, I mean, just in general, I think that, like, there are always going to be these people, right? The speedrunners, the min-maxers, the people that have got to be first to 60, they want those bragging rights.
Min-max, and good word.
That's how they like to play their games. That's not, I don't see the appeal. When I play a game, especially like this kind of game, whether it be Warcraft or Sea of Thieves, where you live in a world, I want to play at my own pace, stop and smell the roses, read all of the quest text, feel like I'm living in the world, and stop and browse and go, oh, what's over here? And, you know, I don't have to like blast through the game.
Mm-hmm.
People that zap through everything, go, quick, we just got to do it. Oh, no, now we're here. Now we're here. Oh, okay, now we're over here. And they fast they do it. I feel like they're missing something. I don't think the game is built to be best appreciated. Games in general aren't built to be best appreciated just racing through them. Mm-hmm. Like, would you watch a movie at like twice the speed just so you can like finish it in half the time?
I don't know. Now I'm just flashing to that joke from Coupling where Jeff's talking about how he watches movies.
Does he watch like the last fight? He's one of the guys watching.
No,
the first
he just fast forwards till there's nudity, stops, watches the section, and fast forwards again till he sees more nudity.
Okay, so I mean, I'm not sure if that's quite the same thing, but there is definitely I'm not saying you shouldn't do it. I'm not disapproving of this guy. Again, there will always be people who do it. I'm just saying it's not my cup of tea.
I
like to play at a more languid pace.
Where do you find speedrunning?
I think it's great. I think it's a lot of fun. I think it's a very, very, very specific discipline. And again, I think that that stands apart to me from, like, Sea of Thieves is a brand new game.
Yeah.
If you're gonna essentially try and like speed run a game on your first playthrough, I think you're missing out on something.
Mm-hmm.
If you take an older game like Mario Brothers, right, is the classic speedrunning game. If that's a game that you've already played a million times and now you go, okay, now I'm gonna try something different. Now I'm gonna try to speed run it. That to me doesn't affect the enjoyment that you already had playing the game the quote unquote normal way.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to just speed run and just blast through content that people have, you know, labored for a really long time to kind of make really enjoyable for you. If all you want to do is like, yeah. It's like making a lovely gourmet meal for someone.
Yeah.
And they just go, and they just scarf it down like Cookie Monster. Like, I kind of feel like you didn't really appreciate that meal as much as I would have liked you to. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. It's not a problem for me if somebody wants, I think you play games how you want. This person wants to do,
it's
great. They're having fun.
Do you you.
Right. And I didn't get the impression that you were crapping on that at all. I don't want to put words in your mouth.
Right.
But it's not your cup of tea. It's not my cup of tea. However, I don't have this whole, like, not my pirate legend. Look, it's a social game built for a social age. It's designed to be played by lots of groups of people together. If a group of this person's fans want to help them farm gold so they can move up quicker, get a quicker reputation.
See, again, I actually have more of a problem with the not my pirate. Just let him be. He's not, sure. Let me ask you this. Is he spoiling anyone else's fun?
No.
Is the way that he's playing the game making it harder for anyone else in the world to play the game?
No. Nope.
Then just let him mind your own business.
Yeah, let him be the first one. I think be well-earned Prodigy X. That's what I have to say.
And, you know, the whole idea of the minions doing it for him. Again, one of the first things you learn is delegate as much work as you can.
Yeah, they're not minions. They're a teammate.
They want to help. They want to be part of the story.
Yes.
Everyone's having a good time. No one else's fun is being spoiled. Live and let live. What's the problem?
I was one of Prodigy X's crew members. Somebody could say I helped him get that title.
Yeah.
I was
there for the, again, if people want to be a part of, you know, be part of his little pirate entourage, why not?
For a social game. Not, this is not like the evil corporation from Ready Player One, like banding together to crush everyone
and
else.
And again, if he was, if the game was built in such a way that he and his minions were going around like hoovering up all the loot in a way that like, you know, like gold farmers would, you'd go to an area and there was nothing, all the mobs were dead because there's gold farmers just constantly killing everything the second it respawns. That's spoiling my ability to play the game, and I object to that. If they're not doing that, who cares? Let the guy enjoy it, play the game the way he wants to play.
All right, so we're on it. We're of a sound mind on that. Next up, very quick note here, coming from ye old IGN. Santa Monica Studios' new God of War game will feature a performance mode for those playing the game on PlayStation 4 Pro. When asked by a fan on Twitter if players need to upgrade to a PS4 Pro to, quote, fully enjoy the new God of War, end quote, game director and friend of the show, Corey Barlog replied, nope, you don't have to. But if you do, 4K is amazing. And if you have a 4K TV, of course. If you don't, we have a performance mode that puts the extra power to good use and makes the game run so smooth.
Mm.
Interesting. So, given that option for that performance mode, don't have a 4K TV, don't have HDR, you can still get a little boost out of it and get some money's worth out of that PlayStation.
It's a tricky situation to be in, though, when he says, like, do you need a PS4 Pro to fully enjoy the game? And he says, no. You kind of fall a bit between two stools, don't you? Because on the one hand, you want to say, get a PS4 Pro because it will confer better graphics and better performance and things that will make the game better. But they also want to say to PS4 owners that might not buy, oh, well, if I'm not getting the Pro, then maybe it's not, I'm not getting the full version. I'm saying, oh, no, you're still getting the full version. It's just that it's even more full over here. Do you know what I mean? Like they're trying to have their cake and eat it a little bit. Do you know what I mean?
The PS4 Pro and the Xbox One X both have that issue.
Right.
And I think with introducing this to a console generation, I think the narrative that both companies wanted was the same narrative that PC players have accepted for years,
that your
experience scales with the capabilities of your hardware. But that's still a very new thing in this arena. And as somebody,
I mean, these split generations that we have now, it is essentially two Xboxes and two PlayStations, which are the same, but not entirely the same. This is a new thing that we're dealing with.
It is a new thing. It's a new day, an exciting new day.
I've got a bunch of games on my desk at home right now, PlayStation games, that I haven't played because I haven't picked up a PlayStation 4 Pro yet, and I feel like I would rather wait until I get the Pro and experience the best possible version of the game.
Ah, interesting.
The struggle is real, Jared. This is a real problem for me.
No, it's and you're from a PC background. Does that play into that at all?
Say again?
You're from a PC background. That's
maybe a little bit, because one of the things you get conditioned to as a PC gamer is you always want the best, you know, because PC, obviously, there's a million different configurations. But, you know, one of the reasons why you get into PC, well, you know, paying the extra money and all the hassle of, you know, getting the games optimized and working right, is you can say, well, that's the best possible version of the game.
Yeah.
So if best possible version of the game is a thing that matters to you, yeah, that does. It's a good point you made. It does definitely does come from the PC mindset, I think.
See, I'm a PC guy too, and I have actually resisted this console generation mid-grade thing because of that. Because I've done that before, and I already got a place to do that, and I don't need another one.
Right.
And so I've got my, you know, again, I'm the wrong person to be asking. I've got my original PS4, you know, my non-PS4 Pro, hooked up to my, I believe, 720p TV.
Okay.
So, you know, low res all the way. I'm good with that.
You're happy. Okay. And you don't feel like you're missing out on anything because you don't have the shiniest thing?
Oh, I totally do. I just try not to think about it.
Okay.
I'm just in denial.
All right. Well, let's move on from this subject then, because I don't want to rub it in.
Third item on the agenda. Throwing to you, Gary Whitta.
Oh, that's right. We're going to do a little audible.
That's right. Yeah, because Gary came in with a story he wanted to bring up. So
the iPhone read by face. There we go. Okay. I read this morning and I thought it was interesting. It wasn't on the rundown, but I thought it might be worth talking about. This is a story in The Verge today.
Okay.
I feel like I'm the host. And this is weird. I'm actually doing like the host.
I think it's very exciting. You would make an excellent host.
No.
How come you never host?
I don't know. No one's ever asked me.
Really?
I also don't want the responsibility.
Oh, okay.
This is a story in The Verge today, written by Nick Statt, who writes, The Never-Ending Destiny 2 Controversy is a teachable moment for the game industry. And I'll just read the first paragraph here and then summarize the rest. Bungie's latest and most significant attempt to address vocal player complaints surrounding Destiny 2 landed on Tuesday, a little more than 6 months after the game's initial launch. And yet, inevitably, the vociferous... There's a good one.
Oh, that is a good one.
Thanks, Nick. Wow. Nick's playing the game.
Nick's playing
even it.
He's in. He's on board.
The vociferous community has regressed. Well, he's bringing them all. In a mere few days,
I'm so happy.
To its previous state of near perpetual outrage. The update.
that's a funny turn of phrase.
The update, nicknamed, I mean, it does very well sum up a lot of player communities out there, near perpetual outrage. The update, nicknamed the Go Fast update for how it was designed to address complaints about speed and competitive intensity, made a number of big changes to how powerful certain firearms were and how effectively and frequently the game's signature brand of sci-fi superpowers could be wielded, among other crucial gameplay changes. But the end result is a similar level of frustration from players who feel Bungie isn't going far enough, and more importantly, that it continues to misread player expectations. At this point, Destiny 2 feels chained down by its own fundamental design decisions, ones that are all but impossible to uproot and alter, without a full-scale reboot of the title in the style of Square Enix's infamous overhaul of Final Fantasy 14. Players want Bungie to effectively roll the game back to the state it was in during the peak of the original Destiny, an unlikely course of events for a studio that has only just begun examining its most critical missteps. Those range from a lack of meaningful in-game activities and bland rewards to a sluggish and uninspired weapons system. And there's much more here. If you can go, yeah, you can go to The Verge and read it. So as the host, I now throw this to you. There's a lot more here about Bungie's struggle to continue to tweak and adapt the game to make it, you know, in response to, yeah, and with the whole business of games as a service, the constant dialogue between what the community is saying and, you know, whatever roadmap the developer have laid out, and then you're trying to find ways to address concerns and imbalances as they come up, and it's a constant balancing act. It seems though that surprisingly, second time around now, Destiny 1, they made a lot of major mistakes, yeah, but they were saying Destiny 2, we're going to learn and we're going to get it right. Is history repeating itself? What is going on?
Okay, so here's my take on it. And I don't want to make anyone angry. I was very excited about Destiny before, mm-hmm, it launched.
The first one?
Yes, the first one. I played a lot of Destiny, uh-huh, after it launched. And then I stopped playing Destiny because
it's
a
familiar story.
Yes, and I stopped earlier than a lot of people did.
Why is that?
Because it was dull.
Yeah, it's dull. It's boring.
Some people love it. To me, it was dull. I do not disrespect you if you enjoy playing this game.
Again, not my, you know, again, cups of tea, different, yeah, for everyone. I'm swimming in your cup of tea right, mm-hmm, now.
And I also, I like that you're swimming in, like, that sounds either like a dirty metaphor or...
Yeah, I feel like the metaphor went wrong, but like let's forget that and just say that we're sipping from the same cup of tea, perhaps, right, which is also unhygienic. So like this cup of tea metaphor is not really working at all.
We can do it with LaCroix.
Let's just say that I agree with you about Destiny.
Yeah, I found Destiny dull after a while, yeah, and
was it the world? Was it the grind? What was it that made it dull for you?
I thought it was artistically very beautiful, but there wasn't a richness of verisimilitude around that world.
The mythology felt very generic to me.
Yeah, me too. And so even though it was pretty, I didn't care about it.
Yeah, I didn't get it. I didn't care. I need a story and a world and a mythology that I can get my teeth into and care about, and I just didn't.
For that,
it just
kind
felt
of,
like a lot of proper nouns.
Yeah, exactly. For that kind of interactive experience, I want that. For that kind of world, not every game needs a story. I mean, I'm with, you know, what's the old quote about Doom and Quake? You know, your average shooter needs, or this is paraphrased, but your average shooter needs as much story as your average porno.
That's not true anymore, though.
No, it's not. But at the time it was made, I mean, I appreciate the fact that Doom has no story. I'm okay with that. I just want to run around and shoot demons.
Yeah.
When it comes to a game like this where I'm playing with a lot of people online and it's a game where I'm leveling up, I want some mythology to go with my...
Well, and again, if you, it's one thing to say, if they'd have said, well, Destiny doesn't really have a story, just go out and plunder and whatever and grind, fair enough. Some people might have complained about the lack of a story, but that would be a choice that they had made.
Yeah.
They did make a choice to go along on story. There's a lot of stories about how on the original Destiny 1, they got very deep into the story and killed it all and rebooted it and basically did like a Pixar. Let's just go back to square one, rebuild the mythology. They basically put a lot of their chips in mythology and storytelling.
Yeah.
And again, for me personally, I just didn't care about any of it.
I was with you. I didn't care about it either. And then games can be repetitive and be good, but I didn't like the loop. I didn't like the rewards for the loop. So when Destiny 2 came around, I kind of had the attitude of fool me once, fool me twice. Now, I believe sequels can improve vastly on the originals. But I think you and I may share this from our backgrounds in the PC world. We've been playing MMOs a long time.
Long time.
And you know, and I know, what percentage of MMOs, even ones with huge backing, actually turn out good games. And it's a fairly small sliver of what gets out there on the market.
Yes.
It's hard to do even if you know what you're doing.
Yes.
I mean, Bungie knows how to make a video game. They know how to make shooting in Destiny is great. But it's hard to do this. And I didn't trust a company that had failed so spectacularly the first time to get it right necessarily the second. So I waited, and I'm glad I did. Can this be turned around? Yes, they obviously want to. They obviously have money behind it. I am worried in this world where everyone's rushing into the games as a service, everybody plays online space, that they may have missed their window.
I sympathize with anyone making a game like this. Games as a service, everyone talks about it. It's the, you know, it's so hot right now. I get it. It's a dangerous, high risk, high reward area that developers are moving into now because they see the reward, which is keeping players online perpetually. And you can get money out of them, right?
Yes.
You can continue to monetize them even after they've paid the original 60, 70 bucks, whatever it is. The problem with it is it's hard enough to design just a hermetically sealed single player campaign game, right? Where you can't really break it or mess with it. But to create essentially a sandbox, a world, and then release an entire population of entirely unpredictable elements, i.e. people, it's essentially you're essentially releasing a live virus into your game, this massive population of people that come and go, well, what if I do this? What if I break that? What if I try to do this and that? And what if I spoil his fun? Oh, I can do this. Oh, that one. And suddenly you go, oh, wait, everything's broken. And to try and keep that balanced and to keep people happy when they're constantly trying to find ways to exploit, or I'm not even talking about cheaters, but people just trying to live in the game. You can do all the beta testing and all this on all of that stuff. You just don't know until you really open the doors and let everyone in. And then you go, oh, shit. This is not, I guarantee there's never been an MMO, there's never been a game as a service where once the full population flooded and they went, yep, that's how we thought it would go. Never, never even once.
Two responses to that. First, that living virus, that's a stupendous metaphor.
Okay.
Love that. That's fantastic. I've never heard anybody put it that way and I love it. Second, nice use of hermetically. So.
Yeah, and I actually don't even know what it means, but it has verisimilitude.
Excellent!
Because it sounds right, but I don't actually know what a hermetic seal is, but it sounds like that sounds like a good seal. That would be a good one, right? That would keep everything out.
I don't know
what it actually means, I don't know.
I don't know what it means either.
Yeah.
Oh, there we go. Who knows? Perhaps in You're Wrong, someone can tell us.
Somebody please give us the definition of a hermetic seal.
Oh, man, we don't have the You're Wrongs pulled up yet. We'll get there. Next one, real quick one from Nintendo Everything. The next update for Xenoblade Chronicles 2 is now available to download. If you have the game, version 1.3.1 is out now. Today's patch is highlighted by the addition of new quests, Pack 2. Those quests can be taken after completing the updates. Just new content here. And Jared writes, not me, but another Jared. Hello, whoever is hosting. I have no idea. Nintendo just released the second set of quests and more for the Xenoblade 2 expansion pass, with even more content coming. This seems to be a strategy of Nintendo, giving him a sizable amount of content after its release. ARMS got a ton of characters and gameplay features, Fire Emblem Warriors just got its third DLC pack adding 9 additional characters and tons of gameplay features and missions, Mario is getting more DLC later, Zelda had 2 expansions, Splatoon 2 probably is going to get even more because of its multiplayer popularity. So my question is, what do you think of this new Nintendo strategy? Do you think they found the magic sauce to make great DLC lineups for all their games?
Xenoblade is one of those things I just know nothing about. It's one of those complete blind spots. I'm aware that it's a thing that exists, but I couldn't tell you the first thing about it. In terms of the larger question, I will say that I think Nintendo has done and is doing a terrific job of releasing worthwhile DLC for their for their Switch games. Zelda, the DLC has been tremendous. Mm-hmm. The Splatoon and ARMS DLC, regular updates all the time. We've got a big Mario update coming. I think they've been doing a great job with DLC.
I agree. I feel like that they're going back to a model that's not particularly in vogue right now. Release a rich, complete game, then add more to it.
And then have really good DLC on a regular basis, yeah.
As opposed to release, you know, something we kind of cobbled together in the hope that we could sell you more DLC later, which is something you see sometimes now.
Yeah.
and what effectively amounts to a barely finished game going out there with DLC to follow and just hope for the best.
No, are you a season pass guy? If you know you're going to be all in on a game, will you pre-buy the DLC or just wait and see what it's
going
to
be? I'm not a season pass guy. I think I did in fact buy the Zelda one. They did that, right?
Yeah, for Zelda, definitely. I'll give you an example of like an upcoming game where I know I'll do it. Like I love The Division. Mm-hmm. When The Division 2 comes out, I'm guessing they'll have a season pass offering. I'll get it because I know I'm going to be all in. Mm-hmm. Like do you even save money? I don't know.
I think theoretically
it has to be a bit cheaper, right? Otherwise, why bother?
I don't buy them. I almost never buy games until I've read extensive reviews. Uh-huh. So I'm usually out of the window
but I mean, like, are you gonna buy Red Dead?
Yes.
Right. So you don't need reviews.
But they've given me so much reason to trust them.
Yeah, that's true. There are certain developers and games that are above that, right? You just know.
Yeah.
You just know.
Yeah.
What do you think the chances are that Red Dead Redemption 2 is going to suck? I would say as close to zero as you can mathematically get.
I agree. If Red Dead Redemption 2 is bad, I will eat a live sea urchin on the air. I mean, that's not going to happen. They're going to make a great game. Yeah, that's what they do.
They are.
And I'm fine with that. Next up, story from IGN. Level 5 intends to be a big supporter of the Nintendo Switch going forward. Basically, in the future, our main titles will all be released on Nintendo Switch, Level 5 CEO Akihiro Hino said in an interview, published by Nikkei Trendy and translated by Gematsu. The idea is that what we've created through 3DS will move over to Switch. Level 5 is the development studio behind a number of popular series, including Yo-Kai Watch, Professor Layton, and Ni No Kuni. Studio's first title for Switch is The Snack World, Treasurer's Gold, which launches April 12th. In Japan.
I got them mixed up with Factor 5 for a second. Oh, that's
very different. Very different group.
Yeah, are they still around, Factor 5?
Didn't Layer destroy them?
I don't remember, but you know, obviously in the N64 games, Rogue Squadron and all that, they were Rebel Assault.
Rogue Squadron 2, man.
Yeah, they were doing some of the better Star Wars games of that generation.
Where do you fall? Rogue Squadron, what's Rogue Squadron 2?
I don't remember the differences between them enough to say. I remember enjoying them.
What's your favorite Star Wars game?
Either TIE Fighter or Knights of the Old Republic. Probably Knights of the Old Republic.
Good man. All right.
Oh, no. Well, Jedi... Okay. Dark Forces 2 Jedi... I'll give you my top three. Dark Forces 2 Jedi Knight, TIE Fighter, Knights of the Old Republic.
Gary.
What?
Hold on. I would say...
What is happening? What is happening? What prompted that?
Dark Forces 2, Jedi Knight.
Good game. What a game.
Has a place in my heart. I don't even know where to...
I put it on the cover of PC Gamer back in the day. I think we gave it like a 97 or a 98% rating. I reviewed it. It was at the time. Man, it was good.
Rolling down that mountain in the ship.
Never got better after that. And I'll give you an honorable mention as well. One that you don't hear enough about. But let me tell you, it was a good game. Pod Racer.
Oh yeah, yeah.
We used to have cash money races.
Really?
Yeah.
Just throw down some money.
We
had
a cash money racing league in the PC Gamer office because because we had it all land up, mm-hmm. you know, and if you had a bunch of players that were all pretty much like roughly around as good as each other, those races came down to like photo finishes at the wire, and it was like explosive.
No, that's
it was
that's
so much fun.
The best thing to come
that
out
game
of
had great physics.
Yep. Best thing to come out of episode one was that game.
It was the pod racing game. Yeah, yeah, I absolutely agree.
Out of the whole franchise, I think that. Yeah, and you can play Jedi Knight on Steam. It is there. I've gotten it running on a modern PC.
I would not want to go back though because I feel like it probably has not aged well.
It's a different kind of shooter from a different era, but it's still exploratory. Lots of secrets, big areas.
What does it look like though?
Oh, it's ugly.
Yeah.
But once you get the lightsaber, you don't care. If for a while at the beginning, you're going to be like, what's so special? Once you get the lightsaber and the force powers and you start to understand, it's a long game.
Yeah.
Great
game.
And man, the
great game.
The last like two thirds of that game in particular is spectacular. Finally, real quick one here. This one from Twinfinite. Telltale Games has tweeted a new teaser and accompanying image showcasing The Walking Dead, the final season, stating that the game will be premiering later this year. Clementine and AJ are standing together as the older and more wizened Clementine.
There you go, wizened.
On at the zombie thing. Good word. Thanks,
Twinfinite. But wait, that's not, that's incorrectly used.
What, do you think wizened?
Yeah. Are they trying to suggest that she's older and wiser? Because wizened doesn't mean that.
I think they mean more like more desiccated.
Yeah, because wizened means like emaciated, like like thinned out.
Well, I mean,
you would be.
Wizened and like... Well,
my guess is here they've tried to do an older and wiser thing, and they're like older and more wizened, I think, is what they're trying to say here. But I think they've got that wrong.
Oh, see, it has been specifically been stated that like if you've had wounds in other games, you'll be scarred from them, be missing fingers, things like that.
Right.
So I'm gonna lean down on the author using it that way.
You think they've got it right?
I think they got it right.
All right. Okay. We'll call that one.
We'll ask Amelia later.
Why not just say older and wiser if you wanted to say that?
Yeah, you could. I'm gonna find out.
I would suggest she's both. She is both wiser and more wizened.
I know the editor of Twinfinite. She didn't write this, but she'll know. I'll reach out and ask her.
I don't need to know that much. But, all right. Yeah.
And it's coming to PC, consoles, and mobiles in 2018. If you're looking for your first glimpse of the game, you need only look at PAX East, where the first footage will be on offer during the show on Friday, April 6th, at the hour-long panel scheduled called Telltale's The Walking Dead, First Look at the Final Season. You'll get a nice eyeful of Clem's new adventure then. Hey, guess what? A little bit of a stealth insertion here.
Stealth insertion?
Who's going to be at that panel? You know who's going to be at that panel?
No, I've got no idea.
Kind of Funny's own Greg Miller.
Oh, is he going to moderate that panel?
That is my understanding.
Oh, good for him.
Yep. If I'm telling you wrong, everyone yell at me during you're wrong, but that's my understanding.
I found about that this in the morning. I woke up, checked my tweets, I saw the image. Oh, there you go, Final Season. Is there some kind of teaser as well, though? I only saw the image.
There's just the teaser image at this point, yeah.
Okay, because it says a teaser and accompanying image, which suggests
teaser, I think, is the text. So this is like, hey.
Okay.
So
all right.
That's all
but
I
there's
saw.
No, like, teaser trailer.
No, that's going to be, okay. I think, that. My understanding is that's going to be the PAX.
Got it.
But yeah, so if you're going to PAX, check that out.
I worked on this game. You think I would know more?
That's where I was going. That was you jumped in. Okay, you worked on this game.
I did. I worked on the first season of The Walking Dead, and they asked me to come back for the final season. I know some shit.
So you worked on the best season of The Walking Dead.
Well, I mean, it depends. Again, I wouldn't want to say that.
I would.
I mean, it was certainly the most, you know, has the most awards of, you know, the other two I think were both good, but the first one was the one that like really kind of put its foot down.
Do you ever sleep with them?
With what? The awards? No, I don't physically have any of them.
You have no physical awards?
No, even though like they have my name, some of them have my name on them.
But you don't
they,
own
they
any.
Don't they don't give you enough to like go around.
Oh.
But I did get to go to Telltale's office and hold the two BAFTAs that we won.
So you got to hold the BAFTA, but you
I
don't
got to hold
to
the BAFTAs, but I didn't get to take them
they
home
don't
with
give
me.
Give you one?
No.
That's
no.
So sad. I thought you would get one. Do you have any awards you sleep with?
No.
Yeah.
I don't have any actual physical trophies, you know, because they go to the whole teams and, you know, they give you one thing and it sits in the, you know, like when you go to Blizzard or whatever and they have the trophy cabinet out front, like that's it, that's what they have. They don't like make dupes for everyone. I wish they did.
I'm a poor but eager writer, and if I ever won an award of pretty much any kind for anything,
you like pay to have your own dupe made or something.
I'm pretty sure I just wrap my arms around it and sleep every night. Yeah, absolutely.
I was happy just to get my picture taken, the masks, you know, the BAFTA masks, and go. Yeah.
You're content.
Do my stupid selfie. That was good enough for me.
I want to see that picture later.
I've got it somewhere.
Gary, if I wanted to know what games I could be playing today, what new games would be available, where would I learn? Turn.
The official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kinda Funny Games Daily Show hosts each and every weekday.
Out today, Alteric on Xbox One and Switch, Agony on PS4. And Xbox One, Code Realize Bouquet of Rainbows for PS4, Code Realize Future Blessings for PS Vita, Farm Expert 2018 for Switch, Shadow Bug for Switch, Space Hulk Ascension for Xbox One, Toki Tori for Switch, and maybe, and we need this and you're wrong, guys, Brian Altano texted me right before the show and said, I texted you right away because the arcade version of Punch-Out is available on Switch now. They've been doing the arcade Nintendo arcade ports. Nintendo's finally recognizing they have an arcade history.
They do.
And they're beginning to appear on Switch. But when I looked into it on the internet, all I could find is information about coming out in Japan today. But Brian says it's out today. At least he did in that text me, but I don't know if he has a Japanese code or if it's actually
out here.
Someone
can go to the eShop right now and find out.
Can you find out for us, guys? Because I really want to know if that's out, because I'm really excited. Because Punch-Out Arcade, fun game. Interesting. You like the Punch-Out games?
I never really played them, but yeah, I remember I played the NES one a little bit. It wasn't really for me. Mm-hmm. And then when the Wii one came out, it was I remember trying to buy it, but it was sold out everywhere. It was a big hit when it first came out.
I've got it. I can loan it to you.
What I really want is like a new Switch version of Punch-Out. Why not?
Well, a new Switch Fit, that'd be great. It seems kind of made for it, isn't it?
Yeah, it'd be perfect. Well,
yeah, exactly.
Perfect. Maybe scratches that itch. I don't know, but I want Punch Out.
Well, they've skipped a generation. It wasn't on Wii U.
No.
So it was on
the vanilla Wii.
Yeah, they only bring Punch Out back every few years. So, yeah. So it might be time. I hope
so. Could be.
Like Punch Out. New dates. We got some dates today. From Touch Arcade, last fall, developer Perchang unleashed a sequel to one of the finest turn-based dungeon crawlers in the App Store with Warhammer Quest II: The End Times, and all was right with the world, according to Touch Arcade. Well, if you were on iOS, that is, Android folks weren't in on the fun just yet, but Perchang promised some Android love soon, and even recruited some beta testers for just that purpose last month. Now here we are, 6 weeks later, Warhammer Quest II for Android, all finished up, and is ready to release just shy of 2 weeks from now on April 11th. There's also a new trailer. Why am I mentioning this? Because I like it when good mobile games come to Android. Premium games.
Are you an Android person?
I am. I used to be an Apple person. Now I'm an Android person.
Do you feel that you often are treated as a second-class citizen in the gaming, mobile gaming world? Because the developers do tend to prioritize iOS and Android when they get it.
Yes, but I also think that a lot of that blame rests on the Android community who, when you, the numbers on the Google Play Store are transparent. You can see roughly the number of downloads something's received.
Okay.
Premium games where you have to pay one fee up front and then get the whole game.
Yeah.
Don't sell well on the Android store. There are amazing games that no one has played on the Android store. You can look at something that somebody obviously put ridiculous production quality work into it, and there'll be 5,000 copies sold on the Android store. And you go, oh, well, that's why they're not doing it, which is why I'm on a crusade here at Kinda Funny Games Daily and at Kinda Funny in general, also at Hop Up and Jump, everywhere else, get people buying Android games.
I've said it before, and I think it bears repeating, and it's not an iOS issue or an Android issue. It's across the whole mobile game world. The 99-cent stroke free app economy has destroyed our perception of value of video games.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to a point now where a game pops up on the store, and it might be one of the kind of games that you're talking about. $2.99, maybe $7.99, that's at the higher end. But even like $2.99, $1.99, you go, ooh, bit pricey. Not sure if I'm willing to take that kind of risk.
Don't know if
$2?
Yeah.
You tip the pizza guy.
Yeah.
You don't think twice about it.
Yeah.
But you're being asked $2 for what could be a really good game, and suddenly that feels like, ooh, I don't know. Big investment. Do you know what I mean? Why is that?
I'm with you.
What's happened to us?
I think what's happened to us is we got programmed. I mean, you look at something.
We got programmed to think that shit should be for free.
We look at something long enough, we start to believe it. And I think we got been looking at it for a long time. And people have to make these things. And so instead of premium games that we get for one price, we have to go out and kind of get nickel and dimed.
But it's an illusion, because the nickel and diming ends up adding up to way more than $2. And it's a trick. It's a head fake. Apple has a section on their store, which I really like. They added it recently. It's for games that you pay for once, and they'll never ask you for money again. I think that's a great
Android
idea.
Android has that too.
Okay, cool.
The same section. That's what they call their premium game section.
I like that.
And I spend a lot of time there. I don't mind free games that, you know, you want to sell me a skin or something, that's fine. I'm great with that. You want to have an ad in the app that's
yeah, but the
not,
ones
not
that really throttle your progress.
Yeah, those are the ones that drive me nuts.
Those are not fun.
Those are not fun. Deals of the day. Today, ladies and gentlemen, if you like deals, today is the day for you. There are spectacular deals today. Very exciting. Good Friday deals. What kind of deals? Lots. Do you like free games? Because you're going to get two of them today if you go out and grab them right now. One from GameSpot. You can now get Spec Ops The Line for free, but only for a limited time. You can grab it from the humble store now, discounted down to the very affordable $0 from the usual $30.
Wow, that's a crazy deal. Not just because it's free, but Spec Ops The Line is a good game.
It is a very good game. Writer of Spec Ops The Line?
My buddy Walt Williams.
That's right. Walt, nifty dude, wrote a really neat video game.
Co-wrote Star Wars Battlefront 2.
Interesting dude, yep.
Yeah.
The store notes that this is a limited offer for 48 hours only or while supplies last, so best hurry along if you'd like a copy. So run out right now. Grab Spec Ops The Line from Humble.
Much like Christ, if you go looking for it on Easter Monday, it's going to be gone.
It's going to be gone. That's right.
See what I did?
You go, look at that.
See what I did?
Oh, there we go.
Is that offensive? I don't know.
No, I don't think so.
Okay, cool.
No, I think that's, as an ordained minister.
Yeah, because that's why I feel like you're the authority on these matters.
Of the Church of God Reformation Movement of Anderson, Indiana, I could say to you, No, that's not offensive.
Okay, good. I appreciate that. I feel like I've got your blessing on that. Thank you.
You know what?
Much.
Elton Trueblood, the great Quaker scholar, pointed out that in his book, The Humor of Christ, that Jesus was just this ridiculously kind of cynical, satirical teacher. That
yeah.
So much of what he did was humor.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of jabs and stuff. Jesus would have laughed at that joke. That's my guess.
You know. I'm not a Christian. I'm an atheist, but mm-hmm. I do love the idea of Christ, and I'm a big fan of like the things that he taught us. You know, give a shit about other people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do more for others. You know,
yeah.
Think more for other people than you do for yourself. All the golden rule stuff, brilliant. Love it.
Yeah.
I don't think you need to be a Christian to practice that in your mm-hmm. life, but I think it's a fantastic thing that all of the teachings of Christ are pretty fucking great.
He's a pretty groovy dude,
and I like to think that if he was essentially this infallible person, I feel like he would have had a pretty great sense of humor as well. Like that, he wouldn't have had that flaw, right? He would have been a funny guy.
Oh, yeah.
Because if you're in the business of disseminating a message, humor is a great way to do that.
Oh, you got to. And I think if you're in the business of surviving 33 years in an occupied country and still being able to say things like care about other people more than yourself, you have to be able to laugh away some pain.
Yeah, especially when something like that could get you killed.
Yeah. You got to be able to laugh away some pain.
I agree.
It's an important part of life. But ladies and gentlemen, that limited time offer is not the only free game that you can get right now. That's right. Because on top of that, according to Touch Arcade, it seems like the cadence of episodic gaming releases on the App Store goes a little something like this. A game that follows a pay-per-play episode DLC schedule, or pay-per-episode DLC schedule, will be released on the App Store, and it'll cost money, but as more episodes are released, the first episode goes free to entice new players and getting their feet wet in the series and buying the rest of it. Telltale's been following this model for years now, and it seems Square Enix is following suit with Life is Strange. The whole first episode recently was made available for free.
Mm.
It's difficult to think many people playing through it not wanting to continue. If you're on the App Store right now, go out there and grab the first episode of Life is Strange if you haven't played it, because it's free.
I'm a big fan of episodic content. I'm a big fan of the model of giving people the first episode for free, because if you're confident that what you've done is good, give them that first free chapter. And, you know, if you've hooked them, then they'll be in for the rest of it that they do pay for.
Free video games. Two of them today. You can have
free video games.
And good ones. You can have Spec Ops: The Line and the first episode of Life is Strange.
That's pretty great.
Kind of spectacular. Finally, GameSpot reminds us that April's nearly upon us. That means another batch of free games for Xbox Live Gold members to download. As always, next month we'll bring four games split evenly across Xbox One and Xbox 360, with the first being available this coming Sunday, April 1st. That's Easter and April Fool's Day. First up on Xbox One is The Witness. Oh,
wow.
The acclaimed puzzle game from developer Thicla and director Jonathan Blow, who's best known for Braid. That will be free for the entire month of April, according to an announcement from Microsoft. Starting on April 16th, it'll be joined by Assassin's Creed Syndicate, the 2015 entry in the AC series that set 19th century London. During the first half of April, 360 owners will be able to download Cars 2, the video game. The second half will bring something much different, as Dead Space 2 will be made free. Both of these games can also be claimed on Xbox One, where they're playable through the backwards compatibility program. It's not too late to pick up some of March's free games with gold titles, which include Trials of the Blood Dragon. These will be replaced on April 1st with some of the new titles, with the exception of Super Hot, which will be free till April 16th. So, right now, Mr. Gary Woody, what do you think of this?
I think if you're a frugal gamer, this is a great time to be alive.
Yes, yes, it is.
There's a lot of great deals out there.
Did you play The Witness?
No, it's because I just know it's going to be. I'm not a big puzzle guy. Puzzles do my head in. I get to the puzzle part and I just instantly look up the YouTube solution, because I'm not a puzzle solver. My brain is not wired that way.
Yeah,
I just know that those puzzles are going to make me crazy.
So I'm also not a puzzle guy. As a matter of fact, they make me angry and frustrated.
Oh my God, yeah.
And The Witness is transcendental. It's ridiculously good.
So you like it despite the fact?
Yes.
So is this you recommending it to me to try it?
I am.
Because I do have it. I have it on PlayStation. I've just never played it.
I recommend you try it and play it for a while. And if you get completely stuck, yes, absolutely go look something up. But look up as little as you can get away with. And because a lot of the game, it's sort of like Celeste, where the narrative and the gameplay gradually fuse together and you start to, oh wait, this is making me understand through the game's action how this is actually playing
out. I do like that.
Yeah, that game is like, it alters your mind.
Very, very simple game, but I played Florence. Have you played Florence?
I love Florence!
And that was a game, again, very simple. It only took me like 20, 30 minutes to play through the whole thing. You know, but it's beautiful.
Yep.
Kind of remind me of like an old, if you ever read like the old Optic Nerve comics, like an Adrian Tamayo comic, kind of reminded me of like those kind of relationship angst comics that I love. Beautiful artwork, sweet story. And I thought even in a very simple way, very cleverly used gameplay mechanics to communicate what was going on emotionally in the game. Very clever.
I agree. It's Annapurna, the folks that did Edith Finch.
Yeah.
Did you play Edith Finch?
I did, and I played Goragoa, was that E24 or was that?
I don't know if that was Annapurna or not because I haven't played it.
It's good.
Yeah.
It just won a big award at DICE GDC for best puzzle game, I think.
You know, it's funny.
Beautiful game.
You brought up Florence, yet another premium mobile game. You might have to dish out like as much as $3.
See, that's the kind of thing where I think some people say like it's $3, but you get maybe half an hour's worth of entertainment for $3. But it's a great half an hour of entertainment.
Well, yeah, I was going to say
it's a lovely little story.
You can read 4 comic books in 3 hours, and you'd spend $12 for that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I liked it. I felt it was money well spent. I really enjoyed it. I've been recommending it to people ever since I played it.
Yeah, what you said about the mechanics fitting that—it's that same feeling. So The Witness is like that on a 60-hour scale.
All right, I think you've convinced me to finally cross the Rubicon and give it a try.
But do keep that IGN guides open there for the moment because some of those puzzles are insidious.
By the way, just a little vocabulary note. I said earlier I used the word frugal, which is not necessarily a big boy word. But the interesting thing about frugal is it doesn't mean what everybody, or at least a lot of people, I think it means. I think people think frugal means cheap.
Expound.
It doesn't. It just means you don't waste anything. There was a series of books called The Frugal Gourmet, and with cookbooks.
I remember The Frugal Gourmet.
It wasn't about buying cheap ingredients. It was just about, like, don't waste anything of what you have. Like, use every part of the chicken, or use, you know, you don't have to throw that away. You can use that. That's good. So frugal just means being efficient. No wastage, basically. You don't waste anything.
That's really
cool.
So
there you go.
See, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Well, I love that.
So we feel like we're learning a lot from each other today.
It's the learning cast. We're over an hour at this point, and you know what?
I don't care.
We don't care. We're
fine. It's Friday.
It's Friday.
Long weekend.
We're doing what we want. Ain't nobody here to tell us we can
stop. No one can tell us to wrap it up.
Ladies and gentlemen listening may be very frustrated.
I mean, this might be boring for people that wish we would wrap it up, but...
It might be.
You know, whatever. We have the microphones. We're in charge.
We care about you. We care about your feelings. I think it's especially fun because just this morning I was talking with somebody on the Kind of Funny Reddit about my tendency to ramble and go long.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to try to rein that in. And then, here.
Well, today's not the best day for that.
Yeah. You know what?
Next time.
We made our choice. Reader mail about to come up, but that's brought to you by MeUndies. You want to look good in your underwear and be comfortable. Don't sacrifice style or comfort. Check out MeUndies. Greg Miller yesterday, sitting here in the chair, allowed me to touch his MeUndies.
He tried to shove in my face on Wednesday. I wasn't a fan.
What? Of Greg? You like the undies,
right?
He
pulled his undies out. He's like, look at my undies. I don't want to look at them.
Yeah, well, I mean, you were a fan of the undies, surely. Just not necessarily they were.
I mean,
on
I'm
him.
Sure they're very good undies. I just don't want to see them on Greg.
Well, I touched them on Greg. They were very nice.
You touched them while he was wearing them?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
They were at his invitation. They were extremely soft.
Right.
Good quality.
Right.
A little sweaty, but that was Greg, not the undies.
Yeah. See, that's what I'm talking about. If you lay them out on the table here, I'll happily go, oh, yeah, I feel very nice. I just want to try them when someone's wearing them.
This weekend, I'm ordering my first pair of undies.
You're going to do it? You're going to make the leap?
Absolutely. I'm going to make the leap. Because I want my crotch to be in comfort.
I was saying earlier, just talking about it, all I want is comfort. I want comfortable pants.
Well, you've already got, I mean, and pants in the British sense.
I mean, when I say pants, I don't mean trousers. I mean underpants.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah.
There we go. So it's so exciting.
What is?
Well, just the thought that this is going to sound very silly to you. The fact that pants and trousers, just the idea of how ridiculous Americans must sound to British people when we're talking about our pants. Like, I don't know how y'all get through
even
a
get
day
me started,
around
Don't
us.
Even get me started on Fanny and all the rest of it.
Oh, okay. I don't know Fanny.
Oh, wow. Well,
I mean, it's a butt, right?
Not in England, it's not.
Oh, okay. Maybe we shouldn't touch on this because you're being quiet. Sometimes it's best to be parsimonious.
Okay.
So.
Ooh, that's a good one.
I like that word. I like parsimony.
Define it for me.
Succinct, but succinct with, parsimony is succinct, but with a slightly pejorative inflection to it.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, good.
So it's not quite the same as Brevity.
It's the vocab builder edition of Kind of Funny Games.
It's like, yeah, it's like Brevity, but with a with kind of a pejorative thought to it. Like Brevity, but being short with someone would be being parsimonious.
It's like being curt?
Between having brevity and being curt.
Okay. All right.
It's not quite curt either. It's like,
it's weird that for a word, somebody said to me once, isn't it weird that abbreviate is such a long word?
Yeah.
And I kind of feel the same way about parsimonious now. Like curt, I get it. Like it has an onomatopoeic quality to it. See, I just did it again.
Oh, look at that onomatopoeia right there.
Yeah. You know what onomatopoeia is, right?
I do know what onomatopoeia is.
Yeah.
Although I can't say the word. I do what it is. I'm thinking the good people at MeUndies.
Go on,
might appreciate
it
if we return
to keep the lights on, as you say.
Fine product that they are advertising here. Ladies and gentlemen, the Adventurous Princeton designs are all available in limited editions. New patterns are released every few weeks on a rolling basis. The best part, and this is what I really like and appreciate, there's a 100% satisfaction guarantee. I'm about to try these out. I'm going to feel. Do you know a good word for comfort? A good synonym for that kind of comfort that you might want to feel from MeUndies? I've been doing synonymms all day. It's a good synonym for
comfort.
Leave
it with me. I don't have anything off the top of my head.
All right. Doesn't have great... Well, if you're looking for that comfort, if you're looking for that silky smooth feel up against the skin, you're going to get a chance to try it for free. And so am I. I can't wait to come back and report to you how my underwear feel.
There really is nothing like a good pair of pants, is there?
There really is nothing. Like
you could spend your whole life searching for that perfect pair of pants.
MeUndies guarantees you will love their undies or your money back. And they have an exclusive offer for listeners, for any first-time purchasers. When you purchase any MeUndies, you get 20% off and free shipping, which is a really good deal. They're so sure to love the underwear, they offer 100% satisfaction guarantee. If you don't love the first pair, you get a full refund. It is simply a no-brainer. To get your 20% off your first pair, free shipping, and a 100% satisfaction guarantee, which I'm about to do, go to MeUndies.com/GamesDaily. That's MeUndies.com.
Oh, they even have like a special page
Games
where you
Daily.
Go.
That's right. So we're going to go.
You get 20% off.
Are you going to get some MeUndies?
All right, maybe. I'll give it a try. Oh, no. You know what I'll do? I'll let you be the guinea pig.
Uh-huh.
You tell me if you like them. If you're happy, I'll go in.
Well, again, Greg loves his, and when I touched his,
I don't trust anything that man says. I want to hear it from you.
All right, you're going to hear it from me.
Yeah,
I'm
going to
come back in here next time. We're going to talk about it.
Okay.
By the way, I haven't forgot. I owe you an Oregon Trail handheld. I went to Target.
Oh, did you actually get it?
I got one, and I went to Target. I already had it when you and I talked. I went to Target to get you one. They were out.
Well, the weird thing, I go to Target all the time, and the weird thing is, like, the one time I wanted to go to Target and get it, like, I just haven't been to Target in ages, but I wanted to get it. And I'm worried now that they've all been...
There's another Target I'm going to try near my home.
Okay. Do you think they're hard to get? Do you think people have been
going
out and grabbing them?
I think that they probably didn't produce too many of them. And I've heard people
say they're
difficult to find.
To go viral, they might have to ramp up production.
Sometimes you got to travel the trail.
Yeah.
Sometimes you got to learn about the trail. Sometimes you got to see the Oregon Top 10.
I played it recently on an emulator
for
the first time in ages, and I forgot. It's a fun game.
Do you play it in school?
No, we didn't really have it.
Yeah, I wondered in Britain if
Oregon
that was
Trail was a thing that I wasn't really exposed to until I'd heard of it because I was aware of what was going on in the American games scene. And I'm sure it was available. Just never came across my radar.
Had a lot of fun the other day nerding out with you about old British video games. You were talking C64.
Yeah.
So were you a C64 kid? Were you a Speccy kid?
Both. Okay. I was originally Atari 2600 was kind of my entry level system. I actually had one before that, but I can't even remember what it was, like a weird thing. And then I had an Atari 2600. Then I had a Spectrum for a good couple of years. And then I got the Commodore 64. And that really was... I still have many fond memories of Spectrum gaming. But the Commodore 64 for me is the one... We were talking earlier about like the dangers of nostalgia and how nostalgia is something that like we probably are better off like not relying on quite so much. But when I do feel nostalgic, when I allow myself to indulge that nostalgic urge... The Commodore 64 is the one thing that gets me right back there.
Yeah.
Because those are my most cherished gaming memories as a child.
There's a lot of good games on that platform.
Just phenomenal.
I mean, some of it's nostalgia, but some of it's those are great games.
Best sound chip ever put in a computer.
Oh, I love the SID.
The SID.
SID's
oh, my
fantastic.
God. Just perfect.
SID tracking. And we're not exaggerating. Like, go listen to the SID chiptunes of Bionic Commando. It will blow your mind.
Go listen to the works of Rob Hubbard and Martin Galway, the two premier composers of music on the Commodore 64. And I mean, I can show you right now. I've got a Commodore 64 playlist on my phone that probably has more than 200 tracks on it. I listen to it all the time.
You're a good man. Love that last Ninja 2 soundtrack on the C64.
Oh, it's so great.
Just amazing. There's so much on there. The Arkanoid intro screen's amazing. Anyway,
yeah, that probably would have been Martin Galway because he did all the Ocean stuff.
But no Acorn Electron for you. No,
I used to fantasize about the BBC Micro because they had them at school. They used to be on TV all the time. And it was, for a while, the only way you could play Elite before it came to other systems because it was native to the BBC Micro. And the Acorn Electron was kind of like the cheap version of the BBC Micro. Yeah. And I did think, but there were never really any games on it. If you wanted to play games, you needed a Spectrum or a 64, or to a lesser extent, the Amstrad, which is kind of like the redheaded stepchild of that 8-bit era.
In a lot of ways, the Amstrad was a little more capable than the Speccy, but probably a little less capable than the C64. Is that a fair...
Say that again?
A little more capable than the Speccy, but a little less capable than the C64.
Yeah, it fell somewhere in between those two stools. It had a different color. The games looked... Yeah, the games look, now that you mentioned it, they look like a kind of a weird mix of the Spectrum and Sega. They had a different color palette.
Yeah.
Didn't have the color clash that the Spectrum suffered from.
Right.
But it didn't have that, I know, there was like a chunkiness to the Commodore 64 graphics that I loved. It was a weird thing. It was the third system, and it was very much like the bronze medalist of those three systems when they were, and by a long way as well.
Right.
Like some people had it. But it was definitely like way back in third position.
And then of course the Atari 800 line was also fairly prominent during that period of time.
For me the biggest distinction was, first of all, the console computer distinction. While the NES and the Sega Master System were the big deals in America, it was really the battle on the outside of the pond was the Spectrum versus the Commodore 64, and again to a lesser extent the Amstrad. We had those systems, but it was more of a computer based system than the console based system in the UK. And then the other big difference was, I would say, on the computer side, while the Commodore 64 I think was more popular in the UK and Europe, Apple II was more popular in the US.
Yeah, Apple II was very popular here. And it lasted a long time. And there's a lot of reasons behind that. Had a lot to do with the fact that it permeated schools. The C64 did do well here. I just don't think it did as well proportionally as it did in Europe.
I mean, the Apple II was obviously a phenomenally successful computer just in general. It was what made Apple.
Right.
And so because it was so successful, people made games for it.
Yeah.
But the Commodore 64... and the Spectrum, while they were both launched as, you know, you can do your taxes at home, you can do your homework, plus you can play games, plus you can organize your finances, you can look up recipes and all the things that no one actually ever did. But they very quickly emerged as essentially game consoles with a keyboard.
Well, the C64 in particular was a game machine. I mean, it was a fine...
It was built to play games.
It was a very capable computer, but it was made up of of arcade hardware that Commodore had been fooling around with, an incredible soundtrack. The thing was slapped together in like 6 weeks.
And the marketing really belied what it was really for. Like the marketing was meant so you could go to your mum and dad and say, look, I can do my homework on it, and I can learn about stuff, and there's educational software. Come on, we all know what was really going on. You really wanted it.
You go out and buy your copy of Bank Street Writer in the print shop, and you could do, you know, you could learn things on it, but you were going to be playing some
games. My understanding was on the Spectrum was actually conceived a little bit later. So Sir Clive Sinclair was very serious about computing, and he's obviously a genius, very important figure in the history of computing. But the Spectrum was always designed to be to do everything. Like he really imagined that you would do your taxes on it, and you would, you know, recipes and stuff like that. And I think he was actually quite chagrined. There you go. He was actually quite chagrined that it exploded, even though it became vastly successful as a games machine, even though it wasn't very powerful. I think he was like, it was kind of a double-edged sword for Sir Clive. He's like, it's supremely powerful. I mean, so he's supremely successful, but only as a games machine. Like people aren't doing anything else with it.
Well, I mean, some of that, the keyboard didn't help.
That rubberized keyboard.
Yeah, you were not going to do a lot of serious
business on
that.
Well, they very quickly came out with the Spectrum Plus that had a different kind of keyboard that wasn't very good either.
Yeah.
And then eventually there was one that had more of a full, like a clickety-clack keyboard. But by the time they did that, like the Spectrum generation was basically
People eventually figured out creative ways to get around the attribute clash and do some very interesting things there with the color.
I can't remember the name of the game, but the first Spectrum game that somehow defeated color clash was a really big deal.
Yeah.
I actually liked that rubberized keyboard.
Did you?
Yeah,
you like the chiclet keys?
Because every key actually, the way that they got around that was every key wasn't just a letter, but also like a whole command
like
macro.
Four functions on it.
You could press P, but it would also just type out the whole word print just in one key.
Right.
So it was very cleverly designed. And it was this little tiny bot. I can never fully explain. And again, I don't want to drown in nostalgia.
Oh, it's okay. We've been on this for 15 minutes.
Just that little, I still to this day, like if you put an original Sinclair ZX, which is maybe like smaller than the sheet of paper, it was tiny.
Yeah.
It was like maybe this big. If you put an original Sinclair ZX Spectrum in my hand right now and I like smelled the keyboard, I would be transported back in time.
Back to childhood.
I love it.
Yeah, just sitting there playing School Days.
I loved School Days. I loved School Days. Jet Set Willy.
Yeah.
Oh, Horace Goes Skiing.
Yeah.
So many.
And playing some Night Lore?
Night Lore was my... See, people don't remember this. People don't remember that Rare, who now obviously made Sea of Thieves.
Uh-huh.
Before they were Rare, they were Ultimate Play the Game. Right. Tim and Chris Stamper built that company off the back of primarily the Spectrum, but then later they had some... They were never as strong on the Commodore 64 as they were on the Spectrum, but Attic Attack, Lunar Jetman, Jetpack, Saber Wolf,
Night Lore,
Alienate. Those games were at the time just unbelievable, and they came in this beautiful packaging. I don't know if you remember. Like most,
well, you got to remember
most games just came in like the kind of the old cassette tape box.
I was
they
introduced
didn't. They
to
came
these
in
later
this
in life.
Packaging.
Yeah, I was because remember I didn't grow up in England, so this is all stuff I fell in love with later on.
Right.
By the way, to remind, and we will eventually get to reader mail. You can run out and grab Rare Replay if you've got an Xbox.
Yeah, and they have some of the old Ultimate stuff on it.
Old Ultimate Play the Game stuff is on there. Yeah, they were Rare, then Rare Coin It, or they were Ultimate Play the Game, then Rare Coin It, and then Rare. I think those were the three names that
went through. And before that, I believe they were Ashby Computer Graphics.
Were they?
Oh, okay, yeah, you want to go all the way back to the beginning.
Oh, man, okay.
You're talking to a true old schooler here.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was 15 minutes of us talking about
wallowing in
British
games you've never heard about,
But... Back at the beginning of this whole section, we were going to do some reader mail. So let's hit a couple of these very quickly. Why Not Pete says, good afternoon, Andrea and Jared. You're not Andrea. I'm super excited to see you two tackling the news today. Thank you. I'm hoping he's excited for you too.
I don't think I could be Andrea. I don't think I'd be very good at it.
Being Andrea?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Andrea's objectively better than you.
Not something I'm going to try.
All right. A big topic floating on the web is the criticism over Far Cry 5's story generally playing it safe with its controversial subject matter involving cults and gun culture. To quote Waypoint's Austin Walker, you can genuinely see what a better version of Far Cry 5 like looked like. Instead, we get this version, one wrapped in a safety blanket of disinterest and reference as punchline. I want to hear your thoughts on fair criticism. Should games be judged more critically for playing it safe or failing to meet a reviewer's expectations? It's a very subjective question, but I'd love to hear what you guys think. Thanks for answering the question. Have a wonderful weekend.
I thought it was an interesting. I haven't played it yet, so I'm just going to talk about this in the abstract. I thought it was. I am going to play it. I thought it was. You know, when I heard about what they were doing, I thought, okay, that's interesting. I'll see. But I wasn't like, oh, what a terrible idea, or you know. I thought, okay, let's see.
Yeah.
I was attracted to the idea that was, and part of it was like, okay, potentially provocative, potentially controversial. Let's see where they go. High risk, high reward, right? Again, if you get this right, you could do something really special. If you don't, it's a long way down. So let's see what happens. And I haven't played the game yet. I have seen that generally people seem, strangely enough, I thought it'd be the opposite. I thought people would say like, oh, like the storytelling in the world is really rich, but like the game and the gunplay is not that great. It's the opposite. I'm seeing people are really enjoying the game, but feeling like the story is the disappointing aspect. Given that there was so much pre-exposure to this and so many people saying, oh, what are they doing? This could go wrong. If they get this wrong, they're going to piss off, you know, the Christian right and everyone and blah, blah, blah. I wonder if they wound up pulling their punch a little bit. What do you think?
I don't know. I don't know why Ubisoft does most of what it does. I love that we have them because they're so zany and weird.
Yeah. We need Ubisoft in the world.
We desperately.
We need them doing that stuff.
Triple A madness.
Like,
I love them.
A triple A company that does slightly mad stuff. Who else is doing that?
No,
EA ain't doing it. Activision ain't doing it.
I love them for it. I love that they're just like, you know what? We're going to make a triple A adventure game about the Ptolemaic period in ancient Egypt and the Roman occupation during the time of Octavian and Antony, and people will buy it.
Let me ask you this. Can you imagine Assassin's Creed Origins... Or I know that's on the back of a long franchise, but can you imagine Assassin's Creed Origins or Far Cry 5 coming from EA or Activision?
I can't comment on that.
It's inconceivable to me that they would do that.
That is, as a former employee of Electronic Arts and a current stockholder, it wouldn't be appropriate for me to answer that one.
So, all right.
But when it comes to my thoughts on the Far Cry issue more directly, watch Gamescast. this coming Monday.
Oh, you got a whole
because
Far Cry
we actually
thing?
Talk about exactly this topic.
Well,
there,
give me the headline. Give me the
headline.
The Cliff Note version
for
of your
me
opinion.
Is I think video games because of the way they're marketed, and because of the way that conservatism sells AAA games, not political conservatism, but business conservatism sells AAA games a lot of the time, mm-hmm. Or is perceived as selling them, means that people tend to go with what's safe. And so video games, particularly American-made video games, avoid sex like the plague, avoid religion like the plague, avoid politics like the plague, and because Americans are fine with violence, embrace violence as their one source of quote-unquote controversy bust.
But if you're going to do it, do it. If you want to play it safe, just don't do this kind of storyline. Just, you know, have it be another, you know, crazy person in a pink suit on some island. Except, and, like, have it be in, a, you know, whatever that is.
But then you don't get 6 months of stories about it. And
well, that's the thing. But if you, again, if I don't like, and again, I haven't played the game, so I can't, I might think the story's great. I can't speak to them. I'm just going by what people are saying, what's out there in the air supply right now. If you're going to say, well, we're going to tackle this potentially lightning rod subject, tackle it. Say something. Don't half-ass it. Otherwise, why bother?
Then
it just feels like a big missed opportunity.
Yeah, when it comes to this, Greg and Nick came in on opposite sides of this question and both had really strong opinions that were very thoughtful about the way the game actually manages to tackle it. Because Nick comes in and thinks actually they handle it pretty well and thinks it's more parodic, whereupon Greg thought they were lighter
parodic?
On it. Is that a word, right?
I don't know.
Related to parody?
Oh, parodic. Sorry.
Yeah.
The way Americans conflate their T's and D's.
Sorry about that, man.
I thought you said P-E-R-O-T-I-C, and I was like, is that a word?
No, very close
parodic,
to...
Parodic.
But we could talk about Peridot, the lovely Steven Universe character. That could be fun.
Steven
Universe guy? Yeah. Steven Universe is the best. All right, last question of the day.
What else you got? Dragon Quest?
What's good, Kind of Funny Games Daily Crew? This is from Brian. What's the deal with Dragon Quest? I think he means 11. The hype is drawing me in, but I know nothing about the series. Going to get a quick primer on the Dragon Quest series. I appreciate it and all that you
You ain't going to get a Dragon Quest primer from me because I don't know anything about it.
Really? You never played the Dragon Quest game?
I mean, I know that there's those little, what do you call them? Those little Hershey Kisses with eyes that bounce around. And I know it's very, very popular.
Slime. I love slime.
And I know it's a hugely popular series. Beyond that, couldn't tell you the first thing about it.
Well, I think it's a historically important series. People like to talk about. I was reading an article. IGN's doing their list of the top 100 games again now, and somebody was talking about Final Fantasy VII and feeling it was rated too low on the merit of its historical value of what it meant to video games. Yes, Final Fantasy VII is a tremendously influential game in the American market. But Dragon Quest is a far more influential game on the history of role-playing than Final Fantasy VII could ever imagine being. So think about what Final Fantasy VII as a fan might mean to you and what it did to video gaming here. Dragon Quest was exponentially more important to every role-playing game you've ever played since. It took an idea that up to then had been relegated to a niche home computer market and only a fraction of that market and translated it beautifully to the console experience. And that's what Dragon Quest games are about, taking role-playing's complexity and making it very fundamental, palatable, and enjoyable without being boring. Yeah.
I like that. Maybe I should check it out.
The two best Dragon Quests are 5 and 9 for very different reasons. 5 has the best story. It's genuinely compelling. At the beginning, you're going to be like, hey, what is this? It just looks like every other JRPG I've played. And then it takes some marvelous turns. 9 is very systems focused, but in a non-annoying way. It's like, you know all those crunchy systems you love from role-playing games? What if we distilled them into a beautifully palatable, instantly comprehensible, near endless series of options that never felt overwhelming?
Yeah, that's what I like about Persona 5 is there's a lot going on, but by the time it's presented to you, I don't feel like I'm juggling a million different stats. Yep. Like it seems pretty straightforward.
You're going to like Dragon Quest.
Okay.
Five is a good place to start.
Okay.
And 9, I feel like system stuff.
All right.
Most of them are good, frankly. From Varns, number 11584. Hello, hosts. My squad up. It's not a squad up. It's for Destiny 2 on PC, and more specifically, my new clan, the Anti-Scrub Movement, or ASM. It's a large collection of multiple clans under the same name in the North American and European regions. We have a Discord that, even if you don't want to join our clan, has many active PvP, PvE, and raid LFG channels, so you can get things done. The Destiny 2 population is a bit sparse on PC, so I wanted to extend a helping hand to my fellow PC guardians who have problems finding groups. You can find ASM on the clan recruitment pages or contact me on Battle.net. I'll send you a link.
All right.
Finally, ladies and gentlemen, one of those rotating segments, Jared gets salty. Now, I offered today to pass the salt to Gary Whitta. Sometimes you're polite, you're at dinner, you pass the salt to someone. You sure you don't want to take the pass the salt?
No, because as I said to you before the show, I feel like the curmudgeonliness and all of that is already kind of baked into my... Like, I come pre-salted. Whereas you, I would, like, if I were to sample Jared for the first time, I might say, give you a bit more salt. Mm-hmm. So I think if you want to get salt, like, for me to go, oh, well, here's my salty rant, people go, yeah, well, that's just Whitta. For you to do it, I feel like it adds something to your brand. So I'm going to pass the salt back to you.
All right, you ready for the 60 seconds then?
Yeah, go for it.
You ready for it? Here we go. You timing me?
I can.
All right.
Hold on, let me get my little clock going here.
All right. Oh, look, Tim's pointing out there's a clock right in front of us. We don't even have to.
Oh, yeah,
that.
We don't actually.
Right.
You don't even need me. All right.
You know what I hate? I hate when a couple of rambling old dudes completely hijack and take over somebody else's beloved show and product.
The worst.
And they give us exactly what we don't want, which is just a bunch of rambling about old computers.
We go on and on and on.
Particularly, I mean, one of the guys is okay. We know him. He's dry. He's funny. And then the other guy, he's not funny at all. He's just this kind of squeaky voiced, lispy, talks too much dude who just can never stop hearing the sound of his own voice talking over the other host and constantly just cannot stand it. Go find esoteric this and esoteric that. When a couple of jerks do that, and particularly one guy who's hosting who's supposed to rein it in, lets it run wild, that's just the worst.
It's the worst.
It really does frustrate me when people do that. So that's my salt for the day. Hey, y'all, look, we love you. I love you. Thank you for the opportunity, as always, to be a part of this. We agreed before the show went on, Gary and I, that we were going to let this one run a little wild. And,
it's Easter weekend. It's a, like I said, it's an Easter bumper bonanza special, whatever.
And if nothing else, you know, you're getting more value. You know what? You can be frugal with this podcast. I bet you could last you a long time.
You could. You could dole it out through the whole week.
Oh, dole. That's another good word. Love that one. Ladies and gentlemen, I think it's time to find out what we're wrong about.
Gary, you want to read them or you want me to read them? We might get a couple of... do you want me? I'll read them.
Yeah, I love the You're Wrong section.
Oh, look at this.
It's
all on a spreadsheet
them.
Now. Okay, let's look
yeah,
at this.
Yeah, I'm very bad with,
all right.
with reading them.
Hermetically means airtight or impervious to outside influence.
Excellent.
So pretty generic, really. Like, it's not necessarily like a specific kind of seal. It just means like nothing's getting in or
just
out.
Just airtight. Okay, so I love
good,
that.
Yeah.
That's good.
A hermetic seal is any type of sealing that makes a given object airtight. So there you go.
There we go.
The term originally applied to airtight glass containers, but as a technology advanced, it applied to a larger category of stuff. Okay, very good. Factor 5 did get shuttered a few years back, but it's been reformed under co-founder Julian Egbrecht as of March 2017.
There we go.
So maybe Factor 5 is coming back.
I think I missed that.
wizened means shriveled or wrinkled with age, as I suggested.
Yeah.
Let's see. You forgot the jingle for games in the mom and pop group, mom and pop shops. He wrote grop shops, so you're wrong.
We did forget the jingle, didn't we?
Punch Out is in fact out today on the eShop.
Oh, that's so exciting! Oh man,
it's $7.99 on the US eShop.
Yeah.
Oh wait, but there's another one here saying it's only out in Japan today, isn't available. So I've got two conflicting you're wrongs here. I don't know what's... Look, just go to the eShop. It's there or it's not.
I don't want to build too many expectations. Arcade Punch-Out is fun, it's but it's not nearly as good
out
as,
in Germany.
As NES Punch-Out.
This guy
it's
confirms.
Yeah.
Let's see. Annapurna published What Remains of Edith Finch, but the ones who developed it was Giant Sparrow.
That's right, that was Giant
Sparrow. Swan.
Yeah, same folks. Sorry, you're right. Thanks.
I had to look at Parsimonious. It does not mean brevity.
What's he saying it means?
I had to look up parsimonious, and now that he's saying it, this is right. It actually means being unwilling to spend money or being resourceful, efficient. So it's actually a synonym of frugal. So you had that one dead wrong.
I'm calling this one.
I think he's right.
I think we need a deeper dictionary. I think he's reading the first definition. He may be right, or she. I'm not sure which yet. I'm almost positive you can be parsimonious with words.
Someone's trying to guess the weird console I had before the 2600. They wanted to bet it was either a Magnavox Odyssey 2. It wasn't, or an Intellivision. Intellivision was the rival system to the Atari 2600. Mm-hmm. And I was never a fan of the Intellivision. I didn't like it.
Oh, really? Yeah. Just not the weird controller?
Weird controllers.
Great
games weren't as good. It was more expensive. It was always played second fiddle to the 2600.
It's the only place you could play Shark. It's where Night Stalker lived, although you could play
Night Stalker. There's no getting past that controller.
No, just none. I love the Intellivision. You play boxing with a Tan Man. The Tan Man beat everybody
else
up.
It wasn't any of those. I think it was made by a company called Binatone. And I remember it came with a game called Video Olympics, but I've never been able to find any reference to it online, but I definitely had it.
The Binatone?
Binatone.
Well, it was marketed by Mattel in America. Video Olympics is actually a 2600 cart through Sears. That's the Sears name for their multi-pong cart that was a launch title.
And last one. Oh, wait. Parsimonious can mean sparing or restrained, so it can be applied to words.
Ah.
So there you go. Yeah, you can be parsimonious in your language. You can be frugal and efficient in your language.
So I had an incomplete
definition. So you actually, maybe you are right.
Right-ish. Let's say ish.
We'll give that one a pass.
Correct-ish.
Color clash. Oh my God, it's all coming back to me now. This guy correctly says, Light Force was the first major, if not the first, Spectrum game to get around color clash. That's true, now that you say it's coming right back. And I believe it was made by a company called Gargoyle Games, but I can't be 100% sure about that.
We
also made these amazing games called Tir na n'og and Dundurak, which were based on ancient Celtic mythology. And then they later did a one called Marsport, which was set on Mars.
I've never played any of these.
All of this useless information filling up my brain.
All right, so when the C64 Mini comes out, are we going to play together?
Yeah.
Yeah, you going to do this?
Like I said, I've already got something like that at home, which is just an old Kempson-style joystick that has a bunch of games on it, like Paradroid and
I love that. You're into the Kempson. Like, I love that. You got the Kempson adapter
had the Kempston... or you had this other one that looked kind of more like a flight stick with a trigger here. I never liked the trigger one. I had the Kempston. The Kempston Competition Pro.
The hardest part...
And the other one over here, this was called the Quick Shot 2, and it sucked.
I love the C64. The one thing that was frustrating about it for me... Well, two things. One was the 1541 floppy disk drive loaded slower than anything imaginable.
Oh, but I remember the day I upgraded from the C2N cassette deck to the 1541 drive... That was a major, major deal. A major deal.
That's right, because most British micros ran on tape a little longer than they did here in America.
Yeah.
I had a tape drive. I had a Coleco Atom. We'll talk about that one day, which is a dead computer. Dead 8-bit micro that didn't take off.
Yeah, I remember the
Atom.
I could do dead computers with you all day long.
Oh, I'm all...
Jupiter Ace.
Oh my gosh, this is so exciting.
You remember the Auric Atmos?
Yes, we're going to talk about Ohio Scientific here, maybe? Or oh my gosh,
oh, yeah.
TI-99-4A.
The Texas Instruments, yeah, the TI-99-4A.
Yeah, the Auric, that was great.
The Enterprise.
K-Pro 2.
Yes, I'm trying to remember some other ones. Oh my God, there were a lot.
We're going to have some fun with this. Yeah. Right, but we're not going to do this to these poor souls.
Maybe we'll do like a special retro episode sometime.
I'd love that. I do miss the other thing with the C64 was that only had the one button interface. Like, you could have two buttons on your joystick, but it only recognized one, the way that the grounding ports were set on it. Apple II, for all its flaws, could recognize two buttons.
Right.
And that was nice.
Yeah, the two buttons were just really to be ambidextrous, right? There wasn't a button one and a button two.
Right. All C64 games are one button like that. And that's... So what you meant, if you're playing something like Contra, you had to like hit the space bar to jump.
That's right.
A little weird. All right, guys.
I think surely we're done.
I think we have to be done for the sake of these poor people.
This was a long one. Was this close to two hours?
This might be the longest episode of Games Daily ever. Is this
See
a record?
What happens when the
is this a record, Cole Greg?
I'm not sure if it's a record. They're saying the last record is 130.
Okay. Oh, we broke the record.
We broke the record. We're like that shot in Last Starfighter. You broke the record.
That's right, record breaker. Yeah, is now someone gonna Centauri gonna show up now?
Show up and bring us up
and
there.
Say, hey, do you want to come and host an intergalactic podcast? Yeah. You've broken the record.
I hope so. I would love that. Oh, what, to go up to space and podcast?
I would say, can I wear my sweats?
Can I wear my comfortable pants? You're a starfighter. You can do what you want.
Greetings, starfighter. You have been recruited by the Star League to defend the frontier against Zur and the Codan Armada.
We need to be real good friends. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you. We owe our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor to you. Happy Easter, however you spend in the day. Next Monday, I have no idea who's hosting the show. It'll be someone. See you next week.
That was fun.